We have a wonderful return guest. We have Sam Sutter, who said he would come back again after the verdict came out in the Karen Reed trial. Of course, we know you as the former district attorney in Bristol County, former mayor of Fall River, and a longtime prosecutor and also defender, a criminal defense attorney in the court. So you've been on both sides of the aisle, and you've actually been in the spotlight yourself. You've been working on famous cases. I got to know you during the whole Aaron Hernandez trial. So you understand what it means to be in the spotlight. What a trial with Karen Reed. I know you've got a lot of good things
to
say.
So much to say. Because
you're a terrific analyst, and that's why I wanted to have you back.
So there are a few things I think I have to say that haven't been said, but I certainly can relate to the limelight of the case because of Aaron Hernandez and a few other cases that we had at the district attorney's office because of our focus on solving cold cases. And we were able to solve, I think, 12 during my 8 years. So fire away. Ask questions. I'm ready to go.
Okay. I'm just going to say that this whole thing, first of all, I think the trial was too long. Do you agree with me on that point?
Well, it's hard to say because I don't know the case inside and out, but obviously the prosecutor thought he had to put on those witnesses, and there was a purpose to every single one of those witnesses. I don't think the defense had more than 5 witnesses total, so you can't blame the defense for the trial being too long. And you really can't criticize, I believe his name is Lally, too much because he obviously came close to winning. That is something that has apparently been lost. But when you think about the fact that the jury was not only deadlocked, but deadlocked on every single charge. Let's start with murder two. Mm-hmm. The jury could have said, we're unanimous that she's not guilty of murder two. We're deadlocked on the other charges. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. Now, maybe the jury didn't realize that they could do that, but I doubt it. I have to believe that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been in courtrooms enough during jury instructions. I've tried over 100 jury trials, around 50 on each side. And this judge had a distinguished career as a lawyer, so I'm almost positive that she made that clear. I didn't listen to the jury instructions, but I'm almost positive she made it clear to the jury that they were to look at every single one of the individual charges and determine, based on the elements, whether she was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt or not. They couldn't even do that on murder, too. That's why the prosecution has to be happy about what happened, and the defense has to be very worried about what happened. And if you noticed, Christine, you could see the change in the demeanor of Alan Jackson and Karen Reed as the jury kept deliberating. So they were very confident on Tuesday, somewhat less so on Wednesday, but saying to themselves, well, it takes time to go through all those exhibits, 600, and there were 2 months of trial. Then by Thursday, I know, I've been in their shoes, they were starting to get nervous, and that's why they pushed so hard for a mistrial on Friday, and they were so relieved on Monday when the judge declared the mistrial.
Very interesting. Now, typically, when something like this happens, when the judge declares a mistrial, 3 options: try the case again, drop the charges, or make some kind of a plea deal. Now, the Norfolk DA's office came out, I think, within an hour and said, we're going to try the case again. Is it going to be the same charges?
I don't know whether he'll stick with murder two. I think that's going to be an interesting decision for him. I have a lot to say about that because I know Mike Morrissey not well. But I got to know him when he was a state senator, and I got to know him even better when he was district attorney and I was district attorney. We sat around the same conference table at least once a month, sometimes twice, for 4 years. So, number one, he's taking way too much criticism. He's a very smart man, and he's very politically savvy. So I can tell you right now, in my humble opinion, he is absolutely going to try this case again, because if he's thinking about running for district attorney for another term, he almost has to. And if he's not, he's thinking about his legacy. So he made a decision here to indict and to indict on those charges, and he is committed to that. So I think that and there are a lot of people out there. I mean, this case has national attention. I brought you an article, I couldn't believe it, New Yorker magazine. There was also an article in New York magazine. I mean, this is a nationwide case now. So he knows that he's under the spotlight, and he is, in my opinion, absolutely going to go forward with a second trial. Now, will he do things differently? I don't know enough about the case to say. I certainly think that, and there's nothing improper about this. I think that Mr. Lally needs to spend some more time preparing his witnesses for cross-examination. He now has the means to do it because he's going to have a transcript. So whether it's Trooper Proctor, whether it's Dan Higgins, whoever it is, there's absolutely nothing wrong with bringing the witness into your office and saying, okay, we're going to spend an hour together. Mm-hmm. And at first I'm going to play prosecutor, and then I'm going to play defense attorney. And get ready, here we go. And I think they will do a better job if that happens. And I think that, I mean, they. And then what can Alan Jackson do? Did you meet with Mr. Lally prior to testifying? Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. And what happened? Well, the first thing he told me was, be sure whatever you do, you tell the truth, Mr. Proctor, Mr. Higgins, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Can be a double-edged sword for a defense attorney if they go down that road. You were coached. You met, because I think jurors understand, of course you're going to meet with somebody before they take the witness stand. So I think Mike Morrissey's going forward with the case, and I think that they're as much that the prosecution can do to do a better job this time around.
Do you think they'll have the same witnesses?
I don't know the case well enough. Some witnesses you have to have. I mean, mm-hmm. you have to have Jennifer McCabe. You have to have Trooper Proctor. You have to have Mr. Higgins. You have to have, I mean, there are at least 20 to 30 witnesses you absolutely have to have. But I do think they need to do something. So you said to me before we came on the air, What's the best piece of evidence for the defense? And I, looking at the New Yorker article, I said the following: an engineering consultant firm hired by the Department of Justice to reconstruct the alleged crash concluded that O'Keefe's injuries were not consistent with being struck by a vehicle. That's a very, very strong point for the defense. Mm-hmm. And I heard another radio host in a very amusing way refer to the defense expert versus the government expert as MIT versus GED. So they've got to do something about that. At the same time, the defense, then you said, well, what's the best evidence for the prosecution? And once again, just quoting here, Reed had left and driven to O'Keefe's place by herself and left him a succinct voicemail: John, I effing hate you. And another voicemail about a half an hour later: you effing pervert. You're an effing pervert. 7 minutes later, you're effing another girl. Called him 53 times that morning. That's very, so you have two powerful pieces of evidence on both sides. Now, some might say that's reasonable doubt, and I say, well, that's going to come down to the lawyering.
What do you think about location? Is it going to be tried again in Norfolk County?
Well, I think that's a really good question that I hadn't thought of. I think that the defense, if I was the defense, I would want it there. In view of all of the support
the pink
she
ladies
had there, mm-hmm. right? Yep. All of the, I mean, my wife and I stopped by. You got us going about the case. See, so on the way back, it was kind of had to do something in Providence, and Dedham was right on the way. I said, "Hey, come on now, it's 5 minutes away. We got to go." So we went. I'll tell you a wonderful story. And sure enough, we saw about 200 people there supporting Karen. On that particular day, that Thursday, I didn't see anybody yet supporting the prosecution, but they did show the next day, somewhere between 5 and 10. But this is a wonderful story. So I'm kind of walking through the crowd and just taking it all in. And I hear this voice that says, Mayor Sutter. And I look and he says, John Souza from Fall River. So I said, good for you. And he said, we're here to support Karen, who has Fall River ties, mm-hmm. strong Fall River ties. So then there were like 5 to 10 of them there. So then another guy emerges and he said, we didn't like what they said about Fall River accent. So I said, well, if you like her accent, you should hear my wife's, because it's even stronger. And they loved it. So I think that in view of, I'm just going to think out loud here now, one of the reasons I think this case has hit a nerve in Massachusetts and beyond in America is because there's a lot of a theme that we hear about even in the national election, which is the connected versus the unconnected.
Right, there's the third rail right there.
And the connected, as people know, they get breaks, whether it's how something is handled within the criminal justice system, whether it's the nephew that wants a job. There, people know that, and there are a lot of people who don't get those breaks. And they resent it, and they have every reason to resent it. Mm-hmm. And here you have a lot of sort of the police collaborating with each other in order to make their case stronger, which they should not have done, and which people resent. So I think that's part of what's, I mean, I read in this article that Aidan Carney, I love what the reporter said, with the unforgivable. I thought she meant unforgettable, but she said unforgivable, whatever she meant by that nickname of Turtle Boy. Do you know how many people, how many followers he has? 50,000. And his whole theme was, I'm from Canton. I know the way things work in Canton. Mm-hmm. These people, the McAlberts, they're called, have been getting breaks for decades, and it's not right. And that hits a nerve because people know that's true.
Do you think the flashier or the more dramatic or emotional parts of this trial, meaning that cringeworthy testimony from Trooper Proctor, which we were listening to, where it was really bad, calling, referring to a woman as the C word, and the judge wouldn't let him, he spelled it out, but she made him say it in court. I think that really hit a nerve with a lot of people, and I think sometimes just listening to that, you might not pay as much attention to the hard evidence. A happened, B happened, we have C. They just remembered that, and they were so horrified by it. In other words, I don't think everything was weighted equally.
So I have something interesting to say about that, too, I think. When I was a young prosecutor, Scott Harshbarger, so I'm really dating myself, he was in office for his first year, 1991, and he wanted to put together a seminar of ambitious young prosecutors to listen to the person that he thought was the best teacher of trial lawyers in America, and that person's name was Herbert Stern, former trial lawyer and a present judge. And Herbert Stern had written a book called Trying Cases to Win and put together a videotape, Trying Cases to Win. I think it's 9 hours. Mm-hmm. So there were 200 prosecutors in the room, and the whole seminar over 2 days led up to this point where you got this hypothetical of somebody that was an extremely unlikable witness, a drug dealer or something like that, a pimp, or I can't remember exactly what, but a necessary witness. And Herbert Stern's challenge was, what do we do with this witness? Who can tell me? And that was the assignment. And I can't remember whether anybody figured it out. I certainly didn't. And his point was, the highest level of lawyering is figuring out how to take the weakness and maybe even turn it into a strength, but certainly mute it, certainly diminish it. So if I was the prosecutor on the case, I would pull Trooper Proctor aside and I would say the first thing you have to do is you have to be totally humble and you have to apologize to everybody for what you said. And you have to act the part, you have to act contrite, and you have to say that was unforgivable what I said. I'm ashamed. I have to live with that for the rest of my life. I apologize to everybody, particularly women. But I'm going to tell you the truth here today. That can be done. And then you can mute the despicable nature of what he said.
Do you think that either side on this has a slam dunk?
No, I think this is a
going to be it. Do you
very,
think this is going to be
very
another
close case? And I think that if I were advising Mr. Jackson, I'm giving a lot of advice here.
Yes,
right?
What would you tell the defense
I
attorney?
I would say
he was dynamic.
Have a lesser included offense operating under the influence, so they can find her guilty of something.
Okay.
And clearly she was operating under the influence.
Do you think she was overcharged?
With all respect to my former ally, Mike Morrissey, I would not have charged her with second-degree mm-hmm. murder. No, I would not have. But he'll say back, Sam, there were some people in that room who clearly were ready to find her guilty of second-degree murder. And I would say back, I know that. But I'll bet you weren't close to a majority on that, and I would let that go.
Mm-hmm. So your best advice for both sides would be to tighten up your game, you think?
And try to find the heart of the case. I mean, that's something that my wife and I realized over decades of trying cases together. That's almost the first job of a trial attorney, is to find the heart of the case.
Like their center, whatever that center of gravity is.
Something that is going to get to the jury's heart. Now, if you notice, one of the jurors that was excluded, so they had to choose mm-hmm. two or three to exclude. I can't remember whether Judge Cannone seated 14 or 15. But I watched last night, I was just doing some reading and thinking about the show, and this juror said something like, and I saw the report on some Boston TV station, I found myself torn because, and literally I think this was the phrase, my heart went out to the O'Keefes, but my heart also went out to the Reeds. So what does that tell you?
Well, it's interesting because I remember during the trial, they said two things can be true. One, that I believe they said that Trooper Proctor was accurate in his findings. And the other thing that they said was maybe she, what was it? I want to make sure they get this correct. That she may honestly believe that she didn't kill him. Somebody said that. And I'm thinking...
Well, now that's really interesting because the way that it... and I think, Christine, you and I have one-upped the New Yorker because the lead-in to the story is the trial, which ended on Monday in a deadlocked jury, became an object of obsession for offering up a mix of conspiracy, we talked about that, corruption, and hard-drinking oblivion. But we identified two other factors, which is that it became a cause célèbre, I think, for many women.
Yes.
And also that it hit a nerve because of the difference between the connected and the unconnected. But your question was, because I got sidetracked on this. Your question was again, because I did want to.
Because two things can be true. Even though it seems like everything should be a nice linear argument, that doesn't always happen.
So this is what I want to say. I didn't listen to his closing argument, but I do think that the defense needs to do a better job, if they want a not guilty, of improving their alternative version of how it happened. Because I believe juries, let's think about it like this. She's unlikely to testify. Okay. And jurors want the person to testify, no matter no matter what they say when they're getting asked the question, will you apply the constitutional principle that the defendant does not need to take the witness stand and testify? Since they started letting lawyers ask questions of the jury before major cases, before Superior Court cases, I've seen this so many times where the juror will go, well, yeah. And I'll say, then I'll have to bear in and say, well, hold on a second, you hesitated. You understand this is a deep-seated, centuries-long constitutional principle. Oh, I know that. So will it affect you in any way if the defendant doesn't take the witness stand and tell you what happened? And then they'll say, no, I don't think so. So here's my point. If she's not going to take the witness stand, then you better give them a reasonable hypothesis about how else it happened. It's not enough just to point out all of the errors, however egregious. That's my own view, and I think that's also been kind of lost.
Do you think that the defense attorney, when the few times that Karen Reed has spoken to the press, do you think that that was very planned? In other words, she wasn't under oath, but she was outside, and she knew she was going to get those sound cuts in every radio, TV, and print report, because those comments did get... I mean, we ran them, too.
I don't think she helped herself. I mean, my wife, who's not just because she's my wife, she's really brilliant about trials. And when she heard her say, when they said something like, do you miss him, or whatever question they asked, and she said, we were only dating. That's almost the opposite of what she should have said.
I agree.
She should have said, I loved him very much. I was strongly in love with him. And I miss him every single day. Now, why? Because the obvious connection. If you loved him and you miss him and you wanted to marry him, you wouldn't have wanted to kill him.
That was, you know, that's a great point. It's sort of like when I'm just jumping aside here, but when Prince Charles and Princess Diana were going through all the problem, and one of the reporters and the British press, they're vicious, asked, did you ever love her? And I believed he said no, or he didn't answer the question. As I remember him thinking, that was a big mistake.
Yeah.
And that put him in a very bad light with a lot of people. Is there a possibility, if they try this case again and both sides tighten up what they're doing, that it could be, I'm just thinking hypothetically, another hung jury and a mistrial? What happens if it happens a second time? Is there a get-out-of-jail-free card in this process?
Well, I have a couple of things to say. So if there's another hung jury at this point in time, so it's 2024 now. I'm not sure what they're talking about for a start date to the trial, but I would imagine it would be late this year or early next year. So now we're into 2025. Let's say it takes another 2 months. Is it possible? Of course it's possible that there's another hung jury. There's strong points on each side, and both sides are going to improve what they did. Then we get into what is Mike Morrissey going to do? I think he would do it again. I mean, I think he would do it again. I don't know whether he would do it a fourth time, but right now, my best friend in the world, Lou Pacheco, former chief of police in in Raynham, and my chief of operations in at the DA's office and chief of staff in Fall River, he's the subject of a book that's being written by Maureen Boyle about the Cater murder. So Cater murdered Mary Lou Arruda, murdered her and tied her to a tree. Mm-hmm. You might remember, right around the same time as Lady of the Dunes 4 years later.
Yes.
That case had four trials. So it was reversed on appeal a couple of times, but there was also a hung jury, and Ron Pina and Paul Walsh kept trying that case. So I think if there's another hung jury, and that's certainly possible, I think Mike Morrissey would do it again.
Interesting. Well, when they do go to trial again, will you come back and talk a little bit more?
Anytime you ask, I'm here. I'm an easy date, Christine.
Anything else you want to add about this case?
Because well, I want to take a look at my notes here. So
national attention.
I talked about
Court TV streaming it live. So many other channels. I don't remember another case except for OJ with this kind of attention. And who would imagine it would be here?
It's amazing,
Southeastern
isn't it?
Massachusetts.
It's amazing that this case got more publicity than Aaron Hernandez or Sarnieff.
Mm-hmm.
Those two huge cases that happened in 2013, this case got, so it's
love,
obviously
sex, jealousy, law enforcement.
Yep.
One more quick question I would ask you, because you always hear about, well, if somebody gets convicted of something, do they not have the right to make money on the story? In other words, for Karen Reed, people keep saying, when is this going to be on Oxygen or Lifetime or a book? How does that tie in? And I'm just thinking, is this some deal that you think, theoretically, that she made with the defense attorney? He is from L.A.
I think that some deals have already been made. I heard Aidan Carney say he's already signed. If I heard him right, I'm positive he said he's already signed a movie deal. And he said, and it's not, I liked his line. He said, it's not going to be any run-of-the-mill Lifetime movie.
Of course, that was my first thought. That's where it was going to be.
So I think the answer is yes. Deals have already been discussed.
Okay.
I know Aidan Carney's made one or two.
Okay.
You had asked a question, though, before we went on the air. I wanted to answer that question.
Sure.
And that was, can the defense appeal?
Yes.
And the answer is yes. And I know this well because I had a case early on. My first jury trial was Commonwealth versus, and I don't think he's going to mind me saying this because we went all the way to the Supreme Court, Adam Jannetty. And Adam Jannetty was having a good time with his girlfriend at a club on Cape Cod. And she was driving, and the car got stuck in a ditch at the club, and all he did was get behind the wheel and try to move it,
mm-hmm.
but he couldn't because it was stuck, and the jury was hung jury, okay? And I happened to read a case just before the trial, I think it's Commonwealth versus Berry, that says you can appeal a mistrial on the issue of the sufficiency of the evidence. So they may very well do that on the second degree murder charge. I don't know whether they will, but they have that right under Commonwealth versus Berry. And my case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they said, sorry, Mr. Sutter, there was enough evidence.
Wow. This is a fascinating case, and I love your perspective on this. You brought up a lot of things to think about, and I am expecting a movie.
Anytime
out of this.
You
books,
want me
articles,
on it. Yep.
Terrific. And again, we're going to put this up online
Thank
too,
you.
But people can
yep.
listen. Again, former district attorney Sam Sutter, and now, of course, an attorney in private practice. We really appreciate you joining us
Thank
today.
You.